गुरवे गुरचंद्राय राधिकाय तदालय कृष्णाय कृष्णभक्ताय भक्ताय नमो नमः। सच्चिदानंद गौर हरि की जय। श्री हरि नाम प्रभु की जय। गौर भक्त वृंद की जय। गौर प्रेमानंद हरि हरि बोल। सो गुड मॉर्निंग टू ऑल, वेलकम, धन्यवाद। एंड टुडे वी आर रीचिंग आवर लास्ट पिलर, आवर लास्ट मॉर्निंग मीटिंग, एट लीस्ट गोइंग थ्रू द सेवन मेन पिलर्स ऑफ रेडिकल पर्सनलिज्म एंड तदात्म्य संघ बाय एक्सटेंशन, which is the topic of on earth in heaven and how material energy hosts the spiritual world. That's how we name the chapter in the book. It's the last chapter of the book. It's the longest chapter of radical personalism. So before diving into the topic, a brief recap of what we saw last morning, yesterday. We were talking on the realm of contemplative prayer, sixth pillar, a very important one. And we began describing, as you may recall, what contemplative prayer is not, though it may be some type of prayer, but not qualifying necessarily as contemplative prayer. And then we proceeded to describe prayer as the state of one who presents to God, you know, like presenting, making ourselves present to He who is always present. It's prayer. It's a state, it's inner state of presentation or of presence, not necessarily words recited, mantras repeated, something happening outside, but what's going on in the inside. That's what determines whether there is prayer or not. So prayer could be defined as state of consciousness, basically, no? And the more you pray in that place, the more you become prayer. Someone who prays becomes a prayer, right? As we say. In our tradition, we have the terms bandhanam. And we mentioned how many times it's mostly associated with reciting prayers composed by others. So later, yesterday, we also invited, gave ourselves the permission to compose our own prayers, as risky as still that may sound for some. So we can recite the prayers of other personalities, of course, but we can also compose our own prayers, whether in written form, in a spontaneous expression of the heart at any moment. You can just be praying at any moment of the day, expressing your love, your affection, your gratitude, your everything to Radha and Krishna. And many times we also talked about the importance of pray while praying, trying, being willing to change our ideas about God, in the sense that sometimes our ideas about God are not equal to God. And many times we pray with the wrong idea, and therefore prayer doesn't become prayer, so to say, because we are praying to someone who does not exist, so to say, to an idea of Krishna which is not Krishna. So the importance of praying, also being willing to release familiar notions about God to the point of welcoming whatever Krishna wants to be for me now. As we say the other day, reporting Richard Rohr, my last experience of God tends to be the greatest obstacle to my next experience of God. So in prayer, we are trying to be ready for what Krishna wants to be for me now. Not yesterday, not 5 minutes ago, but in his ever-evolvingness, who is he now and who can we be for him in our own ever-evolvingness? So we made this first exercise yesterday. Remember centering prayer, which was sitting in silence, not trying to think. No, that's enough of a test, a challenge. I'm trying to be present to the divine in however one's ways, the sweet absolute wants to reveal us to us in silence. We spoke about silence quite a lot as well. And then we, in the context of all the difficulties or challenges that entering into our inner chamber may entail, we also talked about the importance of balancing all that with Krishna's unconditional love as a crucial part of prayer, as understanding that the person we are addressing in prayer is one made of love, made of unconditional love. So we share some names of Bhagavan from Vishnu Sahasranam and other places that refer to his generosity and affection and compassion And we concluded that, in one sense, prayer is a response to God's unconditional love. If we are praying, it's because He loved us first. So to say, if I'm trying to love Krishna, it's because that's already coming. We are already developed. Now we have to become the lover. That's the other part of the equation. So that's the ideal motivation for bhakti. I'm not practicing bhakti because I fear, afraid of what will happen if I don't practice bhakti, of the consequences of offense, of sin, on this, on that, next lifetime, born as a frog, who knows what. Right? I'm not just practicing out of personal agenda and calculation, but I'm practicing trying to give back the embrace, returning the embrace, returning the gazing, loving gaze that I received from Bhagavan. So anyhow, we concluded yesterday with a second exercise that you did throughout the afternoon, which was selecting some of your favorite names and reflecting on them and composing your own prayer, including those names, and sharing in groups. How did that feel? So that was yesterday. Yesterday is yesterday. Yesterday's perfection is today's imperfection. So that's, we have to move forward now. So we were connecting the topics. Yesterday we talked about contemplative prayer, and prayer again is a lifestyle. It's not just a thing we do, ideally. So it entails a contemplative vision, a way of seeing reality in a mystical way, with God in the center, in the spirit of constant prayer, ideally. So, and that entails seeing everything in connection to that, seeing things in their wholeness, in their sacredness. So we said, okay, so let's begin with the thing that may be the most immediate for us, which is matter. Sometimes we may talk about God, soul, spirit, and still on an experiential level, it may sound a little removed from our daily grasp in comparison to how concrete material energy is for us. So how we are dealing with the most immediate thing, that's that may determine how we deal with everything else. So there's a way to make that point. So we'll talk today about that, how to reclaim our relationship with matter, how to find sacredness, holiness in material energy through all the things that we have been talking so far. Remember, each theme is cumulative. So whatever lessons we received the last 6 days, now all of them are included in this one, plus some added features. So we'll talk today about that. An earth in heaven, which is a play of words, if you can imagine. An earth in heaven, right? How material energy hosts the spiritual world. How the spiritual world is closer than what we imagine. So if you allow me, I will begin with the epigraph, or the first quote in the beginning of the chapter. Very nice quote from Wendell Berry. She says, this quote will set the whole discussion, set the tone for the discussion. Somehow we'll be just unpacking this quote, so to say. There are no unsacred places. There are only sacred places and desecrated places. Yeah, there are no unsacred places. There are only sacred places and desecrated places. So in other words, everything is sacred, but sometimes we desecrate things with our own lack of vision and appreciation. But there are no unsacred places. So as we have been talking these days, and hopefully that's, we have been talking these years, a crucial aspect of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, and therefore a crucial aspect of radical personalism, which is another word for that. Sure. Oh my gosh. Even that's sacred. Okay. Don't desecrate the alarm of the cell phone. No problem. No problem. So we have seen throughout these days, and hopefully throughout these years, a crucial aspect of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, our tradition, and therefore a crucial aspect of radical personalism, which is another name for Gaudiya Vaishnavism, and therefore a crucial aspect of Tadatmya Sangha, which comes as an offshoot of all that, is to integrate our humanity with our spirituality. and not separate them. Don't create a dichotomy. Don't create a dualism between the two, when one is exclusive to the other, but one is inclusive of the other. But, as we have talked these days, there's always a but. Many times for us, body, mind, emotions are something unbecoming, are something worthy of dismissal, rejection, worthy of stigmatizing, worthy of crucifixion, whatever. And that takes us, as we have talked now and in the past, to, again, to downplay not only body, mind, emotions, sometimes to downplay all of this somehow related to the family life. You have to downplay all that stuff. And overemphasize renunciation, and conceive renunciation as rejection, speak of transcendence as rejection, and basically see the whole world as a place to leave as soon as possible. As we say, we start to conceive the whole, even Bhakti project, as an evacuation plan to the afterlife. We are just here to leave this place as soon and to take everyone out of here. So all these notions, again, body is bad, emotions are bad, family life is bad, sexual life is intrinsically bad, everything. Family life is inferior, if not bad. Okay, it's not bad, but it's inferior. Sure. I will say that all that stuff come from a root misunderstanding, which is that we need to uproot, which is material energy is bad. The world of matter is profane. Intrinsically, inherently, ontologically, matter has something wrong in it. So whatever seems to have some link with that, it's equally wrong. So again, if we have that root misunderstanding, naturally we have lots of misunderstanding with whatever is connected to that. So we'll try today to, in our last session of our seven pillars, hopefully we can try to unlearn a few of those ideas that we may have heard for during a few decades. We will try to dismantle some of those unhealthy notions and try to understand from which place maybe those things have been said also. But in the context of that, again, trying to redeem, reclaim our relationship with matter, make peace with matter. Let's not be at war with material energy. There's nothing bad about it. As we were talking the other day, sometimes we talk about it and we laugh not to cry, but I guess sometimes the devotees will speak of material energy. It's another way of talking. Our tradition is Maya Shakti, right? We have three Shaktis, Swarup Shakti, Jiva Shakti, Maya Shakti, love, souls, and matter. That's how it generally has been like categorized in our tradition, and God, the energetic source. So material energy is known as Maya Shakti, but many times Maya Shakti is depicted as like some evil witch, like the one presiding over that energetic department, but it's some malevolent figure with bad intention that wants you to fall as soon as possible and wants you to fail miserably and to be far from Krishna. Have you heard that?
Yes.
Sounds familiar?
Yes.
Are you traumatized with that?
Yes.
Oh my gosh. So, so that. What to do with that? For example, that's not correct. That's not correct. Maya Shakti is a Shakti in the service of Shaktiman, as we all see. It's an energy serving the energetic source. So it's in service of Krishna. It's not trying to take people away from Krishna. It's not that Krishna wants people away from him. Am I in service to him? It's repelling everyone. No, that's not how the system is working. Krishna is not that of a bad guy. He's not asking Maya Shakti, repel all these guys here in the UK because I don't like them. I don't want anything to do with them. I'm okay with my gopis, our gopas in Golok, so don't make me mess up with all these others people. That again runs in absolute contradiction to a God made of unconditional love and so on. So we have to be very careful that all the ideas we receive, well, Krishna and Maya and this and that, are all reconciled, are all aligned. It's not that this idea contradicts the second idea and the second contradicts the third and everything is a mess. No. But I proclaim my beliefs with all that set of contradictions. So what's the inner experience that I'm having of it's a very disjointed, fragmented, fractured experience of Krishna and Krishna consciousness. So that's not the idea. The Bhagavatam, second canto, seventh chapter, verse 53. I'm just giving the evidence just in case. The Bhagavatam is encouraging the reader, encouraging us to regularly describe, appreciate, hear about Krishna's interaction with material energy. So Bhagavatam is promoting. This is Harikatha also. Hear how God relates to matter and how matter has a relationship with God. And concludes saying, by doing that, you will be free from all illusion. Right? But here in Maya Katha, here in Maya Katha is not Maya. No? Let's put it that way. But hearing about how Maya operates, how the material energy is in service of Bhagavan, you are free from all illusion because that hearing allows you to see matter in its proper light for what it is. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments to this verse. Let me read, there are two lines only. He says, one should have faith that the material energy, close your eyes better, yeah. One should have faith that the material energy is a devotee with the greatest devotion. And therefore, a devotee should hear about such a devotee. Since the Lord's Leela in relationship to Maya is not Maya. Instead, it is something transcendental. You can open your eyes. Did you get that one? We are trying to create some systemic healing here. This Chakravarti is saying here. Material energy is a devotee with the greatest devotion. It's not just a devotee with the greatest devotion. And one should have faith in this fact. And one should hear about such a devotee. Vaishnavi, we think, oh, this is an evil witch, profane stuff. That's Vaishnavi apparat. You are committing offense to a great devotee. We don't want that. So material energy, again, is a shakti. Matter is a shakti of Shakti Mam in the service. Matter, this is an important point. Get this one. Matter is already engaged in the service of Krishna. Sometimes we say, okay, I will use all the things to engage matter in Krishna's service. No, matter is already engaged in Krishna's service. You are not engaged in Krishna's service. So by you engaging matter in Krishna's service, you are engaged in Krishna's service. Matter is already doing it. No, it was you missing the party only. So I'll repeat it again if you don't get the point. Right? Again, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur say material energy is a Vaishnavi of the highest order. She's already serving Krishna. So we do not have to engage matter in service. No. We have to engage in service ourselves through matter, if you want to put it that way. Matter is already engaged in Krishna's service. We are not engaged in Krishna's service. You follow my point? Yeah. It's not that I'm doing matter a favor, right? All these atoms are completely disconnected from Krishna. Okay, I will offer that. Okay, now you are purified and spiritualized by my grace. No, it's the other way around. Well, now I told you we are dismantling a few false myths here. You get my point? I'm not doing matter a favor. I mean, I'm offering you to Krishna. You are doing, matter is doing me a favor. No, she's allowing me to engage myself in seva through the means of matter. But Maya Shakti is already serving Krishna, probably way more than what we are doing. Like we were saying the other day, when I quote Thomas Merton, he said, a tree by being a tree is glorifying God. No, he's already doing what is expected from a tree. We are not doing what is expected from us. But we tend to think, I'm superior to a tree. Mm. I'm superior to matter. I'm engaging in bhakti. Bhakti, matter is not. Really? No. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur will disagree with you from what we just read. No. Bhagavatam will disagree with you. So material energy is fully dedicated to serve God. More than what we are doing. So we should take matter as guru. No wonder these 24 gurus of the Bhagavatam, first one is earth. No, begin there. No, see earth as guru. And earth is a way of talking about this planet, this matter we are seeing. So guru, first go there. And of course, we have been talking these days about the omnipresence of God, how Krishna is everywhere, how Krishna is in every atom, even in the space between the atoms. So if Krishna is in every atom, how can matter be profane? If every atom is the embassy of God, put it that way. Every atom is hosting God's presence in every place. In every, no, literal example of this is, as we say, Nishrim Halila. No, when Prahlad is with Hiranyakashipu, and Hiranyakashipu say, "Where is your God?" And he say, "Where is he not? Even in that pillar, even in that pillar." And literally, God appeared from a pillar. It was a piece of rock, and God was there. No, Nishrim Hadeva appeared to confirm this point. No, I'm in every atom. No, if you want, I appear from there. It's not that I'm not there. So again, how much can I say this miserable, horrible, despicable world of matter, which is hosting God in every pore of his being? There's something contradictory there. In the 11th canto, 11th chapter, verse 25, following this, Krishna says, that residence where I reside... he's residing everywhere. That's my understanding. Of course, these verses, the previous verses say, I don't know, like things like in the forest, residence in the forest is sattvic, residence in the city is rajasic, residence in a brothel is tamasic, but residence where I reside is transcendental. Which sometimes we'll tend to think, okay, that's the temple. Right, that's the ashram. If you are, how to say in English, like inner internal devotee, external devotee, you have this expression. So those who are internal devotees, which I don't like those expressions, are totally off. I'm residing in a transcendental place, but the point is, that's for the beginners, that type of idea. Eventually, when you progress, it's like residence where I reside is transcendental. Where is a place he's not residing? Right? The residence where I reside, he resides in an atom. And every atom is transcendental in principle. We may not see it. I get it. It's okay. But in principle, according to Shastra, every atom is transcendental. If you have that understanding and eventually that vision, you are already living in a transcendental world. In this connection, let me share a few words that I quote here from Srila Siddhar Maharaj. Beautiful, very brief words. In connection to, he says, everything, again, we can close our eyes for a minute. Page 351 and 352, in case you want to check late. Everything is full of wonder. If we analyze the, only we impose limitations. But when we analyze the atomic parts of wood or stone, we will be in wonder. The infinite is everywhere. Perfection is everywhere. The trouble is that with our limited thinking, we have produced a world of limits. That's a quote. So, the infinite is everywhere. Perfection is everywhere. We are just imposing limits. Of course, it's easier to blame the world than to take responsibility for our own vision. It's easier to say, this world is so bad, so horrible. We have to live, instead of saying, I'm choosing to see whatever I'm seeing. In principle, everything is, God is everywhere. Famous mantra, Om Purnam Adapurnam Idam Purnat Purnam Udachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamiva Bashishyate. That mantra says, well, everything is perfect. Everything is complete. God is perfect. This world is perfect. That's what the mantra says. I'm not making that. That's the meaning of the mantra. Everything emanating from God is complete and perfect. Everything. We're just looking somewhere else. And we're seeing limits, lacking, imperfection, disconnection, failure to bond, as we talked the other day. We are seeing a whole bunch of fragmented parts. But that's not the vision that the Upanishads are given. Everything is whole, contained, perfect, complete. This world is perfect and complete. You are perfect and complete in your own way. But you can also become more perfect and more complete. Krishna himself in the Gita. I'm just sharing a few quotes from scripture so we realize that what we are talking is deeply supported by Shastra. And I'm just sharing 1% of the avalanche of quotations that I torture you with in this, the last chapter of this book. Just for us to realize, oh my gosh, that was there all over the place. In the 9th chapter of the Gita, verse 19, Krishna says, both matter and spirit are in me. Both matter, spirit and matter are in me. It's not that Krishna has on this leg. Make that disappear. That's undesirable, unbecoming. See what Srila Prabhupada says in commentary to that verse. Chapter 9, verse 19. For Krishna, there is no distinction between matter and spirit. That he doesn't make the distinctions we make. We are all frantic about this is bad, this is good, what is... In the advanced stage of Krishna consciousness, because he starts with how Krishna looks at things. So you can say, okay, but I'm not Krishna. So I'm not supposed to have that vision. Then Prabhupada says, in the advanced stage of Krishna consciousness, so that's not for Krishna, not for us, one therefore make no such distinctions. He sees only Krishna in everything. And of course, I will bring the Purva Paksha here, which is the opposing view. Yeah, Maharaj, okay, nice. I'm not Krishna, so I cannot imitate him, but I'm also not someone advancing Krishna consciousness. So I'm not supposed to. That's not for me. All this class, all this stuff you're talking, that's for an Uttam Bhagavat, and the Uttam Bhagavat won't need the class because it's there. So what to do? No. Okay, the Uttam Bhagavat doesn't need the class. It's already there, but we are not there, and we need the class. Even though we don't have that vision, that's the vision we should pursue. When we hear, okay, the highest devotee sees Krishna everywhere, and you can say, yeah, that sounds nice, but I'm not seeing Krishna everywhere. Exactly because of that, you need to hear about how reality looks like from the perspective, the ideal perspective. We may not see reality as the highest devotees, but their way, their vision, the way they see reality is our goal to pursue and attain. So even if I'm not there, I have to have a clear idea of how do I want to see reality? You follow my point? So the Uttam Bhagavat, the highest devotee, sees Krishna everywhere, everything, Krishna, Krishna, and everything. We are not seeing that, but the vision they are having corresponds with how reality looks like, ideally. You follow my point? That's how reality looks like, not how we are seeing it, but how tell us. Everything is in Krishna and Krishna is in everything. That's how reality looks like over here. Although I've seen the exact opposite now, if I have some faith and trust in the vision of these personalities, somehow I should relate to that vision and make that my goal. And although I'm not having the vision, I'm practicing knowing that's how reality looks like. and trying to go out, to live and act accordingly as much as I can. And gradually we'll get to that point someday. If not, we won't be there automatically, as we have been talking, right? So again, we may have had a dysfunctional relationship with matter so far. It's not the fault of matter, but we can have we can be redeemed of that relationship, of that dysfunction, by relating to matter in a healthy way. Now, the Bhagavatam says in the first canto, in chapter 5, verse 33, like a thing that is applied therapeutically, you say, therapeutically, can cure a disease which was caused by the same thing, right? I'm not saying here that our disease was caused by material energy, but was caused by how we approach material energy in the wrong way. So the cure to that is to reapproach material energy in the right way, not to reject it, not to dismiss it. So if we have seen material energy with that eye of exploitation, with that eye of renunciation, both of them are unhealthy. No? One is like, oh, this is for me to enjoy and exploit selfishly. And another is like, this is horrible and terrible. Let's make this disappear as soon as possible. Two sides of the same coin. So still the problem remains with different perspectives, but the same problem. No? So now we have to perceive matter in the middle path. No? Let me read you a few words from Prabhupada in the commentary of this. This is a fasten your seatbelt commentary. So this is Bhagavatam 1.5.33. Srila Prabhupada says, the material conception of a thing is at once changed as soon as it is put into the service of the Lord. Remember, he's not saying matter, the conception of the material thing changes. In other words, it was all about our own. No? So he's not saying you engage matter and matter changes and becomes purified by your grace. No, it's saying the material conception of a thing is at once changed. So our mind changes as soon as it is put into the service of the Lord. Again, it's already in the service, but as long as we engage in that. That is the secret of spiritual success. That's no small statement. No, you want, sometimes people, what's the secret of spiritual success? Well, make peace with matter. That doesn't sound too esoteric. Begin there. Be there first. Everything will follow from that. We should not try to lord it over the material nature, nor we should try to reject material things. Again, two sides of the same coin, what I just say. Everything is an emanation from the Supreme Spirit, and by his inconceivable power, he can convert spirit into matter and matter into spirit. Therefore, a material thing, and then he puts in brackets, so-called, that's not my brackets, those are Prabhupada's brackets. Therefore, materially, maybe there's no such a thing. Therefore, material things, so called, is at once turned into a spiritual force by the great will of the Lord. The necessary condition for such a change is to employ so called matter in the service of the Spirit. Again, it's a language to say we are being employed, we are being engaged, actually. When everything is thus employed in the service of the Lord, we can experience that there is nothing except the Supreme Brahman. No? Sounds non-dualist, but it's our Supreme Brahman is Krishna. The Vedic mantra that everything is Brahman is realized in this way by us. So anyhow, a few thoughts from Prabhupada in terms of... That's Prabhupada, that's there, that's your Gurudev. I'm just quoting your Gurudev. and that's the very spirit. Again, Rupa Goswami, when he speaks about in our tradition, was renunciation, is a Yukta Vairagya. And what's the Yukta Vairagya, the proper renunciation in our tradition? He says, Anashakta Shri Visayam Yatartam Upayunjata Nirbanda Krishna Sambandha Yuktam Vairagya Mujyate. Means, anasakta sevisa, not to be attached to anything for one's selfish motives, yathartam upayan jata nirbandha krishna sambandha, to see everything in Krishna sambandha, to see everything in full connection with Krishna, and to engage from that place, that's proper renunciation. In other words, you only renounced not seeing things in connection to Krishna. No, that's the only thing you need to renounce. Not seeing things disconnected, which take you to exploit things, reject things. No. Both two things imply you are not seeing Krishna there. No. You're trying to exploit something selfishly. You are missing the point. You're missing the mark. Amartya. And you are trying to reject something as intrinsically bad. You are missing the point. So that's not our renunciation. Rupa Goswami said, our renunciation is Krishna Sambandham. Everything exists in full connection with Krishna, and therefore I connect with everything from that place. So they have this saying in English, I don't know if only in the US or also here, beauty lies in the eye of the beholder. Right. No? So here we can extend the idea of profanity lies in the eye of the beholder. No? If I see matter as profane, it's not that matter is profane, but I'm just, as the original quote today is, I'm desecrating matter. Matter is sacred, but I'm seeing it through the long lenses, and I'm seeing something unsacred, but it's my own desecration process going on. So therefore, if matter is not profane, if matter is sacred, if matter is so-called material, if God is in every atom, better instead of conceiving, thinking of God out there, not journey, and we go like up, why don't start to discover Krishna right here? No, in the immediate, in whatever is close to us, everywhere. Why don't start, instead of conceiving God descending from the clouds from a very long distance, why don't discover God in the dirt and the mud of the earth, so to say? He's also there. I'm not saying he's not in the clouds, but many times we have this idea God is a faraway person and a future person. No. Instead of thinking he is a very close and intimate person in the exact here and now. Do you choose your orientation in your relationship with Krishna? Are you pushing Krishna to the future? Not yet, not now, see you later, afterlife. I'm very far away. Are we making Krishna participants of our existence in the right now, right here? So that's part of the idea, no? To discover God in the immediate, especially as we say, this is in those situations, moments that we feel ordinary. He's even there. I'd like to share with you a quote, and from there we will go to one exercise. One quote that I read the other day from a friend of the Center for Action and Contemplation. Her name is Mirabai Star. So I received some writings of her, very interesting. So she's talking about this. I would just like to share the quote. Very nice. She says like this. Those who like can close their eyes, no problem. She says, you can start right here in the middle of your messy life. Your beautiful, imperfect, and exact place you find yourself is the best place to enter. Set your intention to uncover the jewels buried in the heart of what already is. Choose to see the face of God in the face of the bus driver and the moody teenager in peeling a tangerine or feeding the cat. Decide, mean it, keep it open. When we make a pact with ourselves to show up for reality just as it is, reality rewards us by revealing its hidden holiness, its ordinary wonder, its fruitful shadows and radiant wounds. Not always, not everywhere, but more and more often and in the places we least expect. This is what it means to be a mystic, to show up refuge in the boundless intimacy of exactly what is.
Wow.
Amen. She's a poet, as you can see also. So a few words in connection to this, not to the to rewiring our system, recalibrating and being open to discover the divine, as Thomas Merton will say, especially your salvation begin in those moments, in the most ordinary moments of your daily life. Mm-hmm. And for me, this is very much in line with what Mahaprabhu says in his famous Shikshastakam verse, third verse, the most important instruction we have, maybe the most important verse of our whole Gaudiya Vaishnava tradition. Mm-hmm. So when he's inviting us to offer respect to others, manadena, others doesn't mean just, again, Gaudiya Vaishnavas, no? Senior devotee, temple president, guru, acharya, sannyasi, Hindu, guy, not lady, guy only. No? Doesn't mean spiritual people only, doesn't mean just human beings. It means everyone and everything, no? And offer respect. Remember, these days we rediscovered the meaning of the word respect. Remember? Respect. Spect coming from spectacles. In Latin, speciare, I think was the word, which means to look. And re means anew. So to offer respect something or someone is to look anew. Mm-hmm. No? That thing. To be willing to contemplate that thing from a different angle of vision, from a different perspective. And Mahaprabhu is saying, manadena, respect everything. Remain in that space where we are always willing to look at everything anew. In other words, don't take matter for granted. Don't think it's ordinary, profane. Be willing to honor and understand every atom has the potential to reveal transcendence to us. In potential, every atom is a portal of access to divinity. And again, this verse, manadena, trinada, Mahaprabhu said, this is the ideal verse. This is the attitude you have to embrace to attain the goal through the practice of chanting. Krishna Karas Goswami said, if you chant without embracing this, you can chant for millions of lifetimes and nothing, you won't attain the goal. So this is a very important verse. I like to say it's even more important than the Mahamantra. In the sense that it gives us the key to on how to chant the Mahamantra. In that sense only, no, don't misread me. And part of what this verse entails is honor everything, matter included, as sacred, as a portal of the divine. So that's it. We'll go to our first exercise. Yeah? Yeah? Okay. Which will be in connection to what we just mentioned, how to find the divine in everyday objects, situations, people, in the ordinary. This reminds me of Richard Rohr's current meditation that he has described. He says that his present, his main spiritual practice now, he calls it gazing. And it came naturally to him. And he just sits and gazes. And just whatever it happened, maybe he's sitting, he's just gazing at a trash bin for 4 hours, and he's finding God there. Wow. He gets lost and found in that, no? Naturally. He just like that, that's his main sadhana. I'm not saying one should imitate, and this, but it's a beautiful example of, okay, just like, I don't need to go anywhere, do something particular, it's just like paying attention to anything and finding God there. So, that's the objective of this exercise, as you can imagine, is try to shift our perception of the material world by training our eyes to see the sacredness in all things. So what's the idea of the exercise? You have to choose, it will be on your own, you have to choose a daily activity or a situation or a person or an object that you typically view as mundane, as unprofane. It can be going to work, it can be driving, it can be my mother-in-law, it can be dancing with my parrots. You got it now? Okay. So you choose something that you still feel as, this is Maya, this mundane, you know, this type of narratives. So sit with that for a moment, you know, with your own self in silence for a few moments. Reflect on the inherent sacredness of even that. Try to discover that. And try to see that object, activity, person, whatever, not as mundane, not as profane, but as a manifestation of Krishna's energy. That is serving a sacred purpose in your journey. So you can spend a few moments like that, and then afterward, we spend a few minutes. In total, it will take 10 minutes, approximately, the whole thing, just for you to know. So after that, you create some short creative expression out of your reflection, whether it is a drawing, a poem, a journal, some words, something you would like to put into reflecting your experience with that activity, situation, person, whatever, having been rediscovering a new sacred light, no? Respect, no? Looked anew. Is it clear?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we can start now, and we will take 10 minutes for the whole of the exercise. So I hope it was a redeeming exercise to continue again to redeem and reclaim our those parts or ideas or situations or relationship that still we label as mundane or profane, and train our minds to see the extraordinary even in that, no? Like the story we told the other day of this person who was even able to appreciate the worm in the stool, no? Mm-hmm. And by the exercise was able to see always something good everywhere. So let's go to a closing section of today's presentation for a few more minutes, bringing also some sections in the scripture that seem to indicate the exact opposite of all that I've shared so far. Because again, we want to address those sections and how to understand them, how to put everything in context. So we don't need to dismiss them also. We don't want to cherry pick just our favorite sections and those who seem problematic or controversial, we just like turn a blind eye on them. But how we can integrate and reconcile. That's what Vedanta Sutra says, tattu samambayat. Whatever happens in scripture has to be reconciled, integrated. So I'll refer to a few of them. There may be more, but I try to do as exhaustive as a point as I can. Yeah. Okay. One of them, Bhagavad Gita. Krishna says there two times, dukalayam asashvatam. Says this material world is miserable and temporary. So Swami Padmanabha defeated in the debate now. So forget all that I say, burn all those papers you wrote just 1 minute ago. Actually, it's nonsense what you've written, because everything is perfect. No. That's not what Krishna means there. Again, this he's saying, dukkhalayam. This world is an abode of misery. Yes, but what does he mean by this world? That's the point here. Because we use this expression, this world, this material world. Is this, is that? What's the material world? Is it planet Earth? Is Maya Shakti in the service of Bhagavan? Is this great, this Vaishnavi? Or is our perception of seeing things from a certain distorted lenses where everything seems to be there for my exploitation or for my rejection? That's the material world. No? Material world means material consciousness. No? Because again, as we say many times, okay, this material world is horrible, someone says. I say, okay, but the pure devotee is here. So that means that person is horrible? No, you say, no, he's not in the material world. Where is he? He's here. No, but internally he's somewhere else. It's the spiritual world. So spiritual world is a state of consciousness. Yes. And why not the material world as well? Right? If you make such a case for Vrindavan is a state of consciousness, as we have talked on this day, why can't you say the same thing for the material world? Depending on which energy current you are aligned with, you will perceive things accordingly. Srila Prabhupada gives this example with Yoga Maya and Maha Maya. He says this is like the same electric current that can give heating or cooling, but it's one same energy. Depending on how you plug in, you will receive heat or cold. You will see one thing or the other. So when Krishna is saying this world is temporary and miserable, is speaking to those who are seeing this world with the wrong eyes. So it's kind of a preventive tone. Now, sometimes, as we said the other day, sometimes the mother, the child is a little mischievous and wants to inspect the plug and put the finger there and put some water in it and see what happens with the combination. And the mother realizes he will die. He just thinks I'm exploring life. And she knows the cost of that exploration. She will say, don't do that. And he's like, not convinced yet. There's a monster there. No. Again, we don't want to traumatize our kids. We don't want to create false superstitions, as we were talking today in breakfast. But sometimes you have to resort to some of those emergency strategies. That's bad. That hole is bad. Don't put your finger there. Okay. So you save the child's life. Eventually, he will understand what's going on. And there's no monster, there's one. So at some stage of development, we may require that language. And there are many sections in scripture that speak like that. No? If you do this, this will happen. That's bad. Don't do that. Because there's people in that consciousness. So scripture mercifully addresses that case in the language they can understand. But when you rise above that, you no longer need to be talked in those terms, right? Or Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he will say, Jeep Jago, Gora Chandabole, Maya Pisachira, but he describes Maya as a witch, right? So it's like, so what to do with that? But again, it's not that Maya is a witch, like an evil personality. He's speaking about there the bewitching effect of material energy when we approach it with an exploitative or rejectful attitude. No, it's not that in itself, Maya Devi, black snake, bad witch, blah, blah, blah. No? Because he's Bhaktivinoda Thakur. He's the same person whom then will sing another song. I'm at home with my family and Golok is fully manifested in my house. So, on his house is in the material world and with his family, but it's Golok. So we have to put all the things together, right? Or this material world is a prison house. We have heard that, right? Yes. But again, depending on how you move and act on this material world, that becomes a prison house, or it becomes the opposite. We read so many quotes showing that the infinite perfection is in every atom, is everywhere. No? So what's a prison house? Even in this world, you can be in a prison house. But if you are deeply connected with something beyond the prison house, you are not in the prison house. And you are outside the prison house. But if you are not deeply connected, you are in the prison house. So again, we have to put all this in context. Prabodhananda Saraswati will say, Bhishvam Purnam Sukhayate. The whole universe is an abode of joy. That's his testimony. So on one side you have this is miserable and temporary. And I say it's like everything is full of bliss. So, okay. So we have to understand from which place each one of these words is coming. What's the bigger picture? And what is something else in the context of the bigger picture? And again, in scriptures, I will share a few more things to reinforce this idea. We conclude here. But for example, Vedanta Sutra will say, Loka Vattu Lila Kaivalyam. This is my favorite aphorism there in the Vedanta Sutra, which basically says, this whole material creation is the Lila of Krishna and is coming out of his own bliss. So the whole material cosmos is a byproduct of God's inner bliss overflowing. And... Mm-hmm. overflowing him, I'm taking the shape of matter, material energy, material cosmos. It says that the commentators in this section say that the whole world is a byproduct of God's sheer joy, as a drunkard is dancing in frenzy. No? Like Krishna is like a drunkard person intoxicated with bliss and love. And out of that drunkenness, he's dancing and celebrating, and the byproduct of that, they say, is this world. So that's a very different orientation to see matter. No? This is a byproduct of Krishna's own heart overflowing. Therefore, if this world comes again, there's no beginning point, but that's the causal relationship. That joy, that ecstasy, somehow is embedded into the DNA of matter. You cannot separate them. In Christianity, they have the expression kenosis, with K, kenosis, which means God is emptying out himself and the universe manifests as a result of that. Similar idea. The whole planet is the emptying out of God's heart. That's matter. So different ways of making the same point. And if that's not enough, well, despite the whole planet, the whole matter is coming from God's own love and overflowing, and he remains present in every atom and all the stuff we already said. If on top of that, that's not enough, Krishna is coming as an avatar over and over again to planet Earth in his personal form with his associates to validate everything we have talked so far. That's what Jiva Goswami said. Krishna comes to planet Earth, he executes his lila, the lila closes, he goes to another planet Earth and continues. And that ends, he goes to another planet Earth without stop. So technically speaking, he remains on planet Earth forever. And we are also anxious about leaving this place as soon as possible. But Krishna is coming over and over here to validate that, to show there must be something quite cool about this place. God himself chooses to come with all his eternal associates and perform his lila. As I mentioned in the book, and if I want to join him for eternity, maybe I want to join him in his performing his lila on earth for forever. And that will imply that will remain on forever. And it's okay. As we talk these days, a devotee, an advanced devotee, does no longer care for mukti, has no longer care for leaving this planet, going somewhere else. That became secondary, insignificant, Rupa Goswami will say. Moksha laguta krit. At the stage of Bhava Bhakti, the idea of moksha, the idea of having to leave this place, becomes insignificant. Bhava Bhakti. Prema Bhakti, the idea disappeared completely. Because you no longer see the difference. You are somewhere else. You are somewhere else internally that you can be here, and there you are. So you go from samsara to samsara. Now, samsara sometimes describes the forest fire of repeated birth and deaths, and doesn't sound nice. And samsara, sam means total, sara means essence, full essence. So from the idea of samsara as something they have to run away from, you are in samsara. Full essence is right here, right now. So again, Krishna is coming. Associates are coming. Heaven is coming on earth. No? Not only coming, it's always here. So if heaven is coming to earth, it's showing us that basically heaven can be attained here. No? Spiritual world can be attained. Spiritual is here. It's not far away from here. It's just a tuning in with that particular frequency. Spiritual world is not so much a geographical place that I have to take a spaceship for 3 million kilometers and I'm there. It's a movement in consciousness, not with fuel in a mothership or something. It's a place made of consciousness. So it's a place you can reach in terms of consciousness. It's a place made of love. It's a place that you can reach in terms of love. When you reach that corresponding consciousness, you are there. That was Mahaprabhu's experience. Mahaprabhu was, he wants to go.
Go on, Charlie. Go on. Yeah.
Mahaprabhu was in Jharkhanda, this forest in India. Jharkhanda is not precisely a sacred place, but he saw Vrindavan there, and he was in Vrindavan there. That shows you can be there anywhere. It's a state of consciousness. And what Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur was with his guru, Gorkhishordas Babaji, and once Gorkhishordas Babaji told Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, never go to Kolkata. No. Because that's kind of, again, that's not a place for gentlemen. Let's put it that way. And the very first thing Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati did was going to Kolkata. And he opened a temple in Kolkata. He stayed in Kolkata. And he died in Kolkata. Like, what? So someone asked him about that, and he said, I never went to Kolkata. I always remain at the lotus feet of my guru there. Kolkata? I don't know, what's that? Kolkata is a state of consciousness. Vrindavan is a state of consciousness. Kolkata is a state of consciousness. No, like when I say what Prabhupada was in India and left to the west, no, on this Jaladut, and some people in Vrindavan were telling him, why you're leaving Vrindavan? At this age, people come to Vrindavan to live their life here, the world, the body here. And you are leaving Vrindavan. Doesn't make sense. But actually, we will say he was not leaving Vrindavan. He was just spreading Vrindavan wherever he went. And those who thought he was leaving Vrindavan while they were staying physically in Vrindavan, they were not living in Vrindavan because they couldn't understand that Vrindavan is a state of consciousness, and like someone like Prabhupada was extending the reach of Vrindavan wherever he went. So again, the spiritual world, heaven, is a state of consciousness. Everything is already there if we tune in with that. So everything is already present, but I leave you with that question. Everything is already present here, but are we present? So that's basically what sadhana is about. Trying to be present to all that is already present, including matter, the most immediate form. Let me conclude with a brief excerpt from Radical Personalism, almost concluding the book, page 354. Yes. Okay. It says like this, just a few words to conclude. Every corner is the potential birthplace of the kingdom of God. Everything there is potentially accessible from where we are. It's not about going anywhere, but continuing to arrive perpetually. If we put on an entirely different mind, then heaven takes care of itself, and in fact begins now. So it's nothing we have to believe in for later. If we don't touch upon life now, why will we believe in it afterward? The Gaudiya challenge is to thus bridge this unnecessary gap in our own minds to the point that the sweet absolute becomes discoverable through matter, and by such exercise, matter is then brought back to her deserved place of honor. So, Maya Shakti Ki Jai. So, a few thoughts to conclude our today's class and the whole series of the seven pillars of radical personalism, trying to make some full circle with all we have been seeing and being back to the immediacy of material energy and trying to be at peace with that and realize this idea that everything we need is right here, right now. And it's just a gradual process of attuning to that and finding heaven on earth, on earth in heaven. So I will stop here. If we have questions, we have also today in the evening, we will have Ishtagosti, our last Ishtagosti, so you can present questions unless there is something really urgent, pressing, questions you may have now Which I don't feel so. You are fine. Okay, so we'll leave questions for the evening, but I will share with you one more exercise to do during the day, of course, yeah. Of course, in connection to what we just seen. So this will be an exercise, a walking meditation to discover heaven on earth. Let's make it a little somatic. And so the idea will be to experience the world as sacred by practicing some mindful presence. So what's the activity? The activity is you are invited to make some walk outside. Even if it's raining, why not? You can take an umbrella. And if not, so walk ideally barefoot. So you can contact Mother Earth, be grounded for 15 minutes minimum. Try to have on your own, each one on your own. You can go and walk. Try to walk slowly. No, not just like some marathon or something. Just walk slowly. And try to have awareness. Now awareness of what's happening between, beneath your feet, around. And try to do a walk in a contemplative way, like being present, paying attention to different life forms you encounter, no? Plant life, animals, birds, other people walking.
Charlie,
of course. No? Be present, no? Be present. Don't do anything. Don't go chanting rounds. Don't go listen to a podcast. Don't go talking to one another. Just silent, present, walk. And try to acknowledge whatever you see as a manifestation of Krishna's energy, basically. Try to see the whole world of matter as sacred. In other words, try to put in practice what we talked today. try to reflect about, okay, these whole things I'm seeing are Krishna's own heart being poured out in the form of matter. No? I'm witnessing Krishna's heart being poured out here. So have that walk at least for 15 minutes. And after that, we'll make some groups, again, of four people. And you will be gathering with one another and share with you the results of the experience, of the practice, how that mindful presence affected your perception of the world. And hopefully you can carry on with that, not only in that particular work, but always. So that will be the exercise. We'll make the groups in a few minutes. And we'll conclude here first. And today in the evening, 6 p.m., we have our Istagosti Q&A. We can bring questions related to today's topic, also yesterday's topic, contemplative prayer. And tomorrow morning, for those who will be still here, we'll be having some last circle sharing where we will just like wrapping up and sharing conclusions and thoughts and looking forward to whatever may unfold after this beautiful experience of the retreat here. So thank you so much for everything. Shri Sachinandan Gaur Hari Ki Jai, Shri Hari Nam Sankirtan Ki Jai, Gaur Bhaktavrinda Ki Jai, Gaur Pramana. Vanchakalpataru Vishta Kripa Sindhu Vyai Vacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Anantakoti Vaishnavebhyo.